We'll warm up with this rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of February 2007, this is the rain report. Available for transmission over amateur radio as a downloadable MP3 or podcast from therainreport.com. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. This week, we'll continue our rain series, Choosing That Scanner in the 9/11 World. Here's Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, with more of his interview with Jeff Reinhardt, AA6JR, Executive Director of Reinhardt & Reinhardt Advertising, a marketing firm that represents companies like AOR USA Inc., a scanner manufacturer.
As a result of the Electronic Communication Privacy Act, Congress voted on in the late 80s to make monitoring of cellular communications illegal, manufacturers have taken it upon themselves to make more and more of their communication systems digital. You mentioned earlier that some scanners today are capable of decoding some digital signals. Talk a little bit about that.
The most popular signals to decode digitally are what we call APCO 25. APCO is an organization that sets the standards in many cases for public service communications for public safety agencies. One legacy of APCO, for example, are the old-fashioned 10 codes, 10-4 and all of the like. That came way back when radio communications had to be kept as brief as possible. They have developed a standard called APCO 25, which many police and the fire agencies have adopted as a digital format for a couple of reasons. The primary one, to my understanding, is to narrow the bandwidth that a signal occupies as the demand for radio frequencies seems to continually increase. APCO signals are done to a standard that everyone can design to, and it's an open standard. Unfortunately, many other public safety agencies are choosing to encode or encrypt their digital signals. There may be good reasons to argue for doing that, such as an undercover operation where the safety of the police officers, the law enforcement agency, or the evidence gathering function might be compromised if those transmissions were done in the clear. Unfortunately, to my knowledge, there is no way for a home operator to decode those signals. In fact, it's probably illegal to do so. In my understanding, in federal law, if a law enforcement agency has gone ahead and made the effort to encrypt a signal, that you should not attempt to decrypt it. So the APCO 25 is an open platform, and several manufacturers do make radios that can receive and decode those APCO 25 public safety transmissions.
Is APCO 25 also known as trunking?
No. Trunking is a method where, let's say, a city has 20 frequencies set aside in a trunking allocation. What trunking does is it allows multiple entities within that city to use the same radio system. And what trunking does is it searches for an open frequency and puts the voice transmission on a given frequency. The next time the same person transmits, that could be on an entirely different frequency. So it searches for and uses the available frequencies within a given bank and then assigns that frequency given the situation at a given moment. The interesting thing about trunking is that there is a data channel that all of the radios monitor. This gives the operators of such a system flexibility in being able to share the limited frequency spectrum. Let's say the people in the water department share that set of frequencies with the people in the parking enforcement unit, who also share that set of frequencies with the public works people. If you program it properly, they're not hearing each other's transmissions. They're only hearing the transmissions intended for that given unit. So it's a rather ingenious way to try to make the most out of a limited set of frequencies. What's kind of unusual, though, is that from what I understand, and I don't study this material all of the time, but trunking is primarily used in the USA. From what I understand, it's not used greatly outside of this country.
Does trunking limit one transmission per channel per moment?
Yes, but they can jump from channel to channel. Let's say channel number one, you called me to dispatch me to a given address, and when I press my push to talk to acknowledge having received your message, I could be on an entirely different channel, and your receiving radio would tune automatically to that channel and would hear my response. To the user, it's pretty much transparent. To someone who's monitoring those frequencies manually, it can be maddening. There are some receivers out there that can decode the data channel, then send the scanning receiver to the proper channels to monitor a given trunking operation. It does require more input, and it requires the scanner operator to have command of a lot of information to accurately program the receiver.
Trunking scanners are more your higher-end priced scanners?
They can be, but again, the prices have been coming down. Another thing is that, again, there are data channels, and when you get into trunking, you're also getting into some proprietary information that some of the trunking radio manufacturers may not necessarily be willing to share with scanning receiver manufacturers. So there's different formats out there. They're not necessarily compatible with each other. And that sounds, to a degree, okay, to each his own. But where we sometimes, I think, need to think a little beyond the envelope is what emerged during 9/11 and was, in fact, identified by the 9/11 Commission as an issue. And this is cross-platform compatibility. If you fast rewind, 10 or 15 years, or even go to a lot of areas in this country where simple systems are still in use, where everybody was using an FM format on either 150, 160 megahertz or up in the UHF band of 460, 470, 480, everybody could pretty much monitor each other's transmissions, and it wasn't all that difficult to have cross-compatibility and cross-communications between agencies or multiple agencies responding to a given emergency. But now with these digital formats, encryption, trunking, APCO 25, an APCO receiver may not necessarily have programmed into it the ability to operate in an analog mode. Some do, some don't. Some may have a need for it, some may not. I believe there was an instance a few years back where a public safety agency in the Midwest was involved in a vehicle chase. The next agency over didn't have cross-compatibility. Unfortunately, a tragedy resulted from the inability to efficiently communicate between agencies. So the technological advance is not necessarily always a step forward in our ability to communicate effectively with one another.
This interruptibility was cited as a major problem in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, and that was another unfortunate instance, and again, a case where ham radio emerged as a primary force for being able to help public safety and response agencies recover from an emergency on the magnitude of Hurricane Katrina. Because, again, a lot of the intricate systems, such as cell phones, which is, of course, a very complex system, and a lot of the repeater systems, I don't know if they had trunking systems in use in some of those areas, but bottom line was that the simple stuff was the first back on the air, and it worked. A lot of that was thanks to the ham radio responders who were able to get their equipment in place, in use, and on the air for the benefit of the relief agencies.
I'm speaking today with Jeff Reinhardt, AA6JR, Executive Director of Reinhardt and Reinhardt Advertising, a company that deals with public relations for various electronic and non-electronic firms, including AOR. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Let's talk about batteries for a minute. Obviously, a lot of hams and non-hams alike like to think they're all ready and prepared for a major emergency. What is the status of battery technology? What types are being used in scanners today?
Just about everything, unfortunately. From the old NICADs to units that use dry cells to units that have some of the newer battery technologies, lithium ion or nickel metal hydride batteries. In fact, oh gosh, I think Elenco has just come out with a new small receiver that has a built-in lithium ion battery that's supposed to have pretty good life. I believe our friends over at ICOM also make some quality receivers with more modern battery technology. But the recommendation I would have, living out here in earthquake country or whatever the disaster du jour is here in California, I make sure I have a good supply of alkaline dry cells for my handheld radios, including my scanning receiver. But I also have rechargeable batteries. Fortunately, the OR handheld scanner I carry around works on AA-sized batteries, and glad to say that there are now nickel metal hydride cells that you can put in place of alkaline cells, recharge them, and of course use them over and over. But I also like to have a vehicle charger or vehicle power source for my ham radios and scanning receivers. And, of course, an AC adapter that you may be able to tap into when the power is there or if an emergency generator is present. So I like to have at least three different options. The nickel metal hydride and lithium ions, of course, the huge advantage to those is not only a slightly higher capacity in terms of amp hours or milliamp hours, how long they'll operate the receiver, but also they're less prone to, in fact, not prone at all, if you believe the literature, to the quote-unquote memory effect that seemed to manifest itself in the old NiCad nickel-cadmium battery packs.
Have there been any of the problems of batteries overheating and catching fire as in some laptops?
I'm not aware of it with any of the folks that I've spoken to in the receiver industry. I'm guessing that if a battery is improperly charged, it could conceivably be prone to overheating. You need to be especially careful to match the charger with the battery. In other words, a NiCad charger is not necessarily the ideal charger for a lithium ion or a nickel metal hydride pack. There are some that may tolerate it and some that don't, but I would really recommend that the user make sure that they're using the right tool for the right job there. The other advantage that scanning receivers have over ham transceivers is that we can pretty well engineer a constant current draw into the receiver, whereas a transceiver is going to be a fairly light current draw in the receive mode. But when you hit that push to talk to transmit, especially at full power, now you're going to be putting a really good drain on that battery, and you have to have batteries that are flexible enough to operate in both modes.
One of the challenges for the blind community over the years has been access to scanners that have a lot of flexibility and versatility, but which would be accessible or usable for a blind person. Either with direct frequency entry, speech synthesis, what have you. What's out there today that a blind person can effectively use for an off-the-shelf scanner?
My personal knowledge is rather limited in that area, Hap, but my instant response to that question would be, unfortunately, you still would probably be best off selecting a receiver that is compatible with computer operation. And I know a lot of folks who are sight impaired have become, you know, very adept with the adaptive tools found in computers. And that, to me, would be the quickest way for a person to be able to operate a more advanced receiver. Actually, a lot of sighted folks are doing the same things because to really bring the maximum performance out of some of the receivers that I'm familiar with, and again, I'm most familiar with the units in the AOR line, to try to do all of those things using the keyboard of the transceiver is actually quite cumbersome and restrictive. But by using a computer and actually some of the software programs, many of them made by third-party manufacturers, these are folks who have a passion for getting the most out of a receiver and making it do some things that are pretty incredible. So if, in fact, the person is comfortable with the computer controlling any number of other functions, you may actually be at a huge advantage when it comes to operating some of today's more advanced receivers.
Of course, the advantage of computer control is you can dump huge numbers of frequencies and reprogram memories by the hundreds.
Absolutely. For example, the handheld receiver and even my desktop hold 1,000 memories. And with my handheld, if I'm traveling to a distant city, I'll research the frequencies for that city at home, load them into a special memory bank, and when I arrive at that location, I'm set to go. Same with public safety and service events, but even some of the entertainment events that are out there, such as the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds are coming. Those frequencies can be found very quickly by searching the internet. Program those into your receiver, and if you're off to the air show, you've got an additional way to enjoy it. Even when the aircraft may not be visible, you can hear some of the precision that goes into a performance of that caliber.
Speaking of the internet, is there any one website where you can plug in a zip code, for instance, and come up with a database of frequencies for that particular local area?
I've done it as I've traveled from place to place, and I'll sometimes do a search on Google or one of the other search engines and put in scanner frequencies and the name of the city or radio frequencies, public safety radio frequencies. Unfortunately, I wish there were some one clear place to go. I believe there are even some commercial sites that require subscriptions to get comprehensive lists of frequencies, which I don't blame these folks for if they're going to go ahead and assemble all of that information. Generally, I've had pretty good luck with just typing in scanner frequencies in the name of the city. But unfortunately, some of that data is not always reliable. Things do change. Frequencies change. Systems are upgraded and so on. But at least it's a good place to start.
That is ironic when you can find anything you want to find on the internet that you can't find a major scanner website to have it serve as a portal to nationwide, stateside frequencies.
Well, now you know what your retirement project can be.
Two chances of that, slim and none.
Rain's Hap Holly, KCNRP, will conclude this series next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2007 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now from a frigid Macomb, Illinois, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.